Good morning, everybody. Very early morning. So yesterday we started discussing dark matter, and I'm not really giving you any details or anything. I'll just give you some observational facts and some proposals for what dark matter might be. So that's why it's actually like bedtime story, so there's no really any calculations, hardcore calculations involved. So we discussed two astrophysical observations which led people to believe that maybe there is dark matter. So one of them was this statistics of clusters of galaxies. And so we concluded that the luminous matter is actually much, much smaller than the total mass contained in these clusters. So another one was this galaxy rotation curves, where if you look at the stars which move sufficiently far from the center of the galaxy, actually they don't follow, their velocities don't follow Newton's law, but rather actually they keep increasing, or they keep to be steady, despite the fact that there is no observable matter in stars anymore. Okay, so these are really two astrophysical evidences that there might be dark matter. So now you might be thinking, yeah, dark matter is actually baryons, but they are not simply shining enough, so we don't see them as luminous matter. For example, this argument based on Big Bang nuclear synthesis tells you that actually it cannot be so. And so the argument is very simple. So Big Bang nuclear synthesis fixes this number to 10 to minus 9 so that you get, so that you boil the right amount, the right abundance of light elements. However, this number after that is conserved. And so if you measure the density of photons today, you can infer on what is the density of baryons today. And so now you can compare that with how many baryons you see in the shining matter. And then you conclude that all baryons today are actually in the shining matter. So it's in the stars, or as Carlos pointed out, maybe some also in this plasma around the stars and stuff like that. Okay, so this tells you it is not baryons. So of course, the most accurate measurement of how much dark matter you have today comes from CMB. And I will not go into details, but CMB tells you everything about everything. So in particular, provides another independent measurement of everything. So in particular of omega dark matter and omega matter. And so everything is encoded in this diagram here. So CL and L as we plotted yesterday. And you have beautiful way how to remember this graph. And so basically these peaks here, they tell you about the fluctuations, about the oscillations of the plasma when CMB was released. So these are sometimes called Doppler peaks. And very approximately, they tell about oscillations of plasma, which consisted of electrons and protons and photons and whatever, when at the surface of last scattering, so when CMB was released. Okay, and so it would take the rest of the course and probably more to really explain the connection, so I'm not going to do that, but I'll upload, if you are interested, I found a nice text where this is discussed, like 100 pages text, and you can actually read some details about this. But you know, very very crudely, so we have you know, these oscillations of the plasma, and so if you split it into the standard things, like okay, the standard plasma, which would be baryons and photons and electrons and other things. Okay, so standard plasma. So now you know that there are these oscillations of this thing because there is gravitational attraction between the particles, but there is also the pressure caused by quantum effects or whatever. So the standard plasma has pressure. As well as gravitational attraction. And so this causes these oscillations. Okay. However, at the time you already had dark matter as well at the time. And the dark matter was already decoupled. So you had also dark matter. And this was decoupled. From the rest of the plasma. So actually, if it is decoupled, it has no pressure. Okay? So the only thing how it actually it can affect these oscillations is through the gravitational attraction. So only acts gravitationally in particular. It causes these, you know, gravitational potential wells. And so these affect the oscillations, of course, but because there is no pressure, they change this, you know, characteristic frequency and stuff like that. Okay, so that's the bedtime story which we have here. So now it's obvious that if you had no dark matter, the oscillations would be different because the gravitational wells would not be that deep enough. Right, so it's really, so what dark matter really does for you in this primordial plasma is that it lowers these potential wells and causes, you know, the oscillations to be something else than they would be without dark matter. And so this reflects on this picture of Cl versus respect to L. Okay, and so if you had no dark matter, the picture would look different. And you can actually plot how different it would look. So anyway, so what is actually tells you that if you know how to do it, you can read off from this picture how much dark matter was there and how much matter was there at the time of CMB release. Okay, so very approximately, the position of first peak, well, it tells you about curvature of the universe, but also about how much matter you had, and then the ratio, this is ratio of first to second, tells you about how much baryons you had. Okay, and so this fixes to 0.26, and this fixes to baryons to 0.04. So actually this provides another, you know, much, much more accurate measurement of how much matter you had, and so dark matter definitely played a role already at the time when CMB was released, and you have this prediction here. Okay, so this is the most accurate measurement of how much dark matter you can actually have. Very good. So I haven't explained anything here, but read that 100-page text if you want to. So very good. So So now we have evidence for dark matter. So what dark matter can actually be? So what is dark matter? And so there are a few possibilities. So it's not a leading idea now, but anyway, so people thought, well, if we had only these astro observations, we actually know that, both of these arguments were basically based on the fact how Newton's law behaves, right? So we used the Newton law to study how much matter is there, and then we compared with how much luminous matter or what's happening there. Okay, so these astro observations based on using Newton's gravity or general relativity. But of course, it's possible that GR or Newton is actually wrong. And so people developed various other theories. So for example, so new theories as MOND, which is modified Newtonian dynamics, or its covariant generalization by PI's own John Moffat. It's called modified gravity. Okay, so you know there are various proposals how to modify Newton's law and how to modify general relativity so that these observations actually can come out right. And it's quite simple to do it. So for example, with MOND, you have just one parameter, which you have to somehow fix. And then you predict properly, you know, the galaxy rotation curves and stuff like that. But of course, I'm not sure if people discuss what will happen with the CL picture in these. I don't know. Maybe that has been solved, but anyway, so that's certainly one possibility that GI is wrong, but it's not the leading idea. The leading idea is that really there is an extra matter. And then this extra matter could be either Machos, which is an acronym for massive compact halo objects. So, which is like macroscopic dark objects, which are not baryons. Okay, so made of baryons, so macroscopic dark objects. And a typical candidate here would be, for example, black holes. Okay, so. G black holes. So that's one possibility for dark matter. And the second one, which is much more favored by people, is WIMPs, which is weakly interacting massive particles. So you basically postulate a new type of particle or whatever, but this particle cannot be interacting with normal matter strongly because we would see them long time ago. And so you know that's why weakly interacting basically. Okay, so now let me briefly mention this Machos. So it's not now leading idea, but if indeed we had these, let's say, some small black holes in our universe, which would carry lots of mass, but of course black holes are completely dark, then you could observe them by gravitational lensing. Okay, so these guys could be observed error by gravitational lensing. And so typically what would happen is that if you are looking at, let's say, a galaxy or a star or whatever, and so the dark matter, for example, the black hole, gets in between the source and you, so then you see that the intensity of your star actually increases for some time. And so you would then notice that there was something which is gravitationally acting in between you. Okay, so now people have been searching for this, and as a result, there are some, you know, very good bounds of what the mass of these objects could be. And so there's a bound, and it's a review by Paczynski. Quite old review, but still. Okay. And so the bound is something like this. You can exclude the masses which are between so dark matter here, well, macho, and then to the two solar masses. So you can, so these things are ruled out. Okay. So, you know, these black holes or whatever, they couldn't be between the size of the Pluto and between 100 solar masses. That cannot happen. So it's very unlikely they would be bigger than 100 solar masses. But it's also quite unlikely that they'll be smaller than Pluto. Well, it's possible, but it's quite unlikely. So now there's also another bound which comes from... So if it were black holes, for example, then you know that the black holes actually, if Hawking is right, they actually evaporate and there's Hawking radiation coming out of them. So now if you had, if black holes, which with the mass, which is smaller than 10 to the minus 19 solar masses, then they would already Hawking evaporate, would completely evaporate already. So anyway, so there is still some window where actually these machos could exist, but I think that people now believe that maybe this is not the way to go, and that you can exclude this macroscopic objects to be candidates for dark matter. Are there any questions for this? Everything is pretty simple and pretty nice. Okay, so now WIMPs. We can have several possibilities here. So you can divide WIMPs into two big categories. Either it's a thermal relic, which means that originally such a particle was in thermal equilibrium with the rest of the bath. So was in thermal equilibrium with thermal baths, with baths of other particles. And so if this were true, then at some point it had to sort of decouple from this thermal bath, and it's not interacting with the particles in the bath anymore. And so depending on when this happened and whether the particle was still relativistic or not at the time of decoupling, you consider two cases. There's either hot thermal relic, so that means particle, so our WIMP would be still relativistic, at the time of decoupling. So, in other words, the temperature at which this happened had to be actually bigger than the mass of such weakly interacting particle. And then the cold one, where the particle was already non-relativistic at the time of decoupling. Okay, so an example of the hot one, example of the hot one would be, for example, neutrino, right? So we know that neutrinos are still relativistic. Neutrino. And an example of cold one would be the lightest supersymmetric particle. Lightest supersymmetric particle. So you have these two possibilities. So I will show you in a minute that this probably did not happen and it's sort of ruled out. Well, this does not work. So you cannot have hot thermal relic. On the other hand, you can have cold thermal relic. And so there is something which is called WIMP miracle. And you will discuss that in your homework. I hope it will seem to you that everything is very, very miraculous. So really what this addresses is that, yeah, I assume that there is some extra particle which is weakly interacting with other matter. I assume that this particle was actually cold when it decoupled from the rest of the bath. And then you can make some estimates on, you know, what the mass of this particle has to be and whatever. And then you find it exactly, so these estimates match exactly where you would expect a new particle to be. Okay, so that's why it is called, you know, WIMP miracle, because the ballpark actually is right. And so people have been searching for these particles because it looks like the most promising candidate for dark matter. But they've been searching for them more than 30 years or something like that, and they haven't found anything yet. Okay, so that's actually a little bit frustrating that we still haven't captured any of these. And now you are probably getting to the bound that neutrinos actually start messing up with your experiment or whatever. So then you need to get to know how to deal with the noise caused by neutrinos and stuff like that. So it's actually, you know, getting more experimentally challenging to measure these WIMPs here. But anyway, so that's there's this WIMP miracle, but it doesn't quite work because nothing observed yet. Nothing observed yet. And it's not that people were not trying to actually find these. But of course, for gravitational waves, it took 100 years after Einstein predicted them. And for Higgs, it took 50 years after it was predicted. So maybe it's still okay. So that's this big category of thermal relics. But there is another one where actually this it was never part of the thermal bath. So non-thermal relic. And an example of this would be axion, so some scalar field. And we will discuss that in tomorrow's tutorial. So I'm not going to tell you anything about axion, but you will have tutorial tomorrow about it. Are there any questions to this basic classification of what dark matter could be? But probably it's not.
Free scene?
Sorry?
Free scene is not one of those. Well, it can be a non-thermal relic, a freezing effect.
Freezing effect?
Instead of a freeze out, freezing. It's not in thermal equilibrium. Gets into thermal equilibrium, but...
Okay. I don't know much about that, but yeah.
The relic density, instead of being proportional, I think, inversely proportional to the scattering, the sigma V, it's inversely proportional to sigma V, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
It's really fun.
Okay.
Whatever.
That's good. Okay, so let me very briefly convince you that hot thermal relics are actually unlikely. And why I have to do that, there will not be more of the story, because we'll calculate something which seems maybe reasonable to some of us, and then I'll tell you, actually, this is not reasonable because. And I will not show why it's not reasonable. So anyway, but I have to show you this type of calculation, because you will do it in your homework, similar type of calculation for the WIM. Okay. So let me show you this hot thermal relic is ruled out. And so the approximation goes as follows. So we assume a particle chi and particle has the mass m chi, and we assume that is still relativistic at the time of decoupling from the mass. Okay, so this is the assumptions which we are making. And so now from freeze out till today, from out till today, we can use this conservation of entropy density, which goes like, well, the entropy density goes like 1 over volume, so the total entropy is conserved. And so the entropy density goes like 1 over volume, but particle density, if the particle is conserved, also goes like 1 over volume. So that's why the density of the particle divided by the entropy density at the time of the freeze out must be the same as the density of the particle today. Okay, so this is today. Okay, so this must be certainly true. All quantities goes like 1 over volume. And so that's why. So we can solve that for what is the density of our chi particle today. So n chi today is just S0 divided by S at freeze out times m density of the particle chi at the freeze out. Okay. So now we have to calculate some of these quantities. So S0 is the entropy density today of the bath. Well, so we know that everything is basically photons and maybe neutrinos. So we know what this S0 is. So S0 is really the entropy density today, which is some number so that it works, times the temperature 2 pi square 45. And the temperature of CMB. So this is the CMB temperature, 2.7 Kelvin. Right? So this is the entropy density today. And so this number is something like 3.7 if you take neutrinos and photons into account. Okay, so this is the entropy density today. So now we have hot relic. That means that the particle was relativistic at the time of the freeze-out. So I can use the formulas for relativistic particles at the freeze-out. So the density of the particle is the relativistic density which we didn't derive. So it's the number of degrees of freedom of that particle times this zeta function 3 divided by pi square. And then the temperature at the freeze-out cube. And entropy at the freeze-out is given by the particle content, which are still relativistic, so G as at the time of the freeze-out. And then 2 pi square 45 EF cube. Okay, so you can of course plug it in there. So now, today, dark matter is non-relativistic. So today. Dark matter is non-relativistic. And so its density today is just given by the mass times the density of the particles. Okay. So now if you look at all these formulas here, so we have mki, well, that's the mass, which we want to find eventually. But nki 0 is S0 over SF and chi F. Okay, so now if you look at what S0 is, that's proportional to T0 cube. SF is proportional to TF cube. And N chi F is proportional to TF cube. So actually, TF completely drops out. And you'll find that this is M chi T0 cube or something like that. So you don't really need to know the temperature for that. So we have this density here. And so let's calculate what is this omega for that thing. So you define omega chi 0, which is what is the density of chi today divided by the critical density or the density today. We know that today, the density is very, very close to the critical density. So I can say that it's the density of the particles today. Okay. So our formula, this one here, is that rho chi 0 is m chi n chi 0. M chi 0. And then rho 0. So for that, you use the Friedmann equation, right? So instead of rho 0, I'll just write. So you know that the Friedmann equation is h squared is 8 pi g over 3 rho. So I'll just use that. I'll have 3 h 0 over 8 pi. And then g newton, I'll just write as m Planck square again. So notice very carefully that I'm writing capital M Planck square, which I'm saying, well, that's 1 over M Planck square is G Newton. Later today, I'll be writing small M Planck square, which will also absorb in it those 8 pi. Okay, so just a warning. So anyway, so now you plug everything in. So you sorry, there's something strange. Sorry for that. It's m chi 0 and it's m chi and n chi 0, right? I'm just plugging that formula there. Sorry for that. M chi, n chi 0, and then rho 0 is this thing. So if you plug everything here, n. So n chi 0 is given by that. All these formulas are here. What you will eventually find is that this is equal to g chi over gsf, and then 0.08 h square m chi over electron volts. So here I have been using lots of things which are annoying to do, but anyway, so you have to do use something. So number of relativistic particles today, people for some reason takes this number 3.91. I don't know where it comes from. H0, you just parameterize by this small h, right? So it's so H0 is how far, you know, how fast the galaxies are receding from you. So the velocity of these things is kilometers per second per megaparsec. So you write this as 100 times h kilometers per second per megaparsec. But then I need to write it in the right units. And the right units is actually giga electron volts. So this is 2.13 times 10 to minus 42. So remember these numbers. You will use them in your homework. H giga electron volts. So this is what the Hubble expansion rate is today. OK, you will also need M Planck. So it's 10 to the 19 GeV. And you will also need the temperature today, which is 3 Kelvin, but again, in GeVs is 2.35 times 10 to minus 13 GeV. OK, so using all these things here, I get this number 0.08. And then there's still h there. Okay, so anyway. So very good. So we have this magical formula. So now you can estimate what actually is there any limit on this mass of the particle chi. So you know that dark matter today is something like 25%. It's smaller than 25% of the critical density. Okay, so this thing here must be smaller than 1 over 4, which is this 25% of dark matter. Okay. In other words, you are getting a constraint that m chi is smaller or equal. So now you have 1 over 4 divided by 0.08, and then you have h square. And then you have g sf divided by g chi, and then electron volts. Okay, so you have an upper bound of what this mass of this chi particle can be. So now, if you plug in these guys, so h is something like 0.67. So h squared is something. This is 4 times 8 is 32. So you can actually approximately treat the first thing as 1. So this is just 1. And then what is unknown here is, of course, the degrees of freedom hiding in the chi particle, and also how many particles were relativistic at the time when actually the freeze-out happened. So these are the unknowns which you cannot really get rid of them. But let's say if you place this decoupling before BBN, okay, before 3 minutes of the universe, so around BBN, but before BBN, then you can estimate that this is of the order of 10. And if I say that g chi is, let's say, I have one such particle, one polarization, or whatever, or it can be 2, so anyway, this will still be of the order of 10. Okay, so this is, if we say it happened before BBN, or approximately at BBN, then this is of the order, I don't know, 20. This is of the order of 1 or 2. So this is something like 10 electron volts. Okay? So then you actually conclude that the mass of this particle would be smaller than 10 electron volts. Okay, so that's what the calculation, what the estimates give you. Of course, if you place it somewhere else, you know, yeah, you get something else, right? If you place it much earlier than BBN, you would have 100 electron volts or whatever. But anyway, even that number would be too small to actually produce you that CL picture we see on the left-hand side. Okay, so I'm not proving anything here. I'm just saying this is too small. So the dark matter is too light to produce deep enough potential wells for your plasma at the time of CMB. Too small to reproduce CL as we observe it. So I'm not proving this, of course. So there is no really moral of the story. So the moral of the calculation is, yeah, I can actually make, if it were hot, the reasonable estimate for the mass of the particle is, let's say, 10 electron volts or 100 electron volts or something like that. But this is actually too small so that it would correspond to what is observed at this point. And so that's why hot relic is actually ruled out. Horrible, isn't it? Are there any questions to this calculation?
Are you saying that, let's say, neutrino was hot dark matter, but now it becomes cold dark matter?
No, I'm not saying anything. So I'm saying the neutrino, well, neutrino is not dark matter, but it would be like that type of particle you would say is hot. So neutrinos, if they are not, you know, very massive, they would be relativistic at the time of the decoupling. So when neutrinos decoupled, they were still relativistic, of course, from the rest of the mass. And so something like neutrino could be dark matter.
But
I'm not saying neutrino is dark matter.
You're saying that the dark matter was hot before, but now it becomes cold. So you mean that it was relativistic, but now it's non-relativistic.
Oh, right. Sorry, I misunderstood. So today, dark matter is definitely non-relativistic. Okay.
Is it the same dark matter?
The same dark matter. It's just cooling down. So, you know, yeah, it's cooling down. All right, it's a disaster. Yes?
So why do you assume this decoupling happened before
So it definitely happened before the CMB. Now, people typically put it before BBN. I don't remember what the reason is. So it's typically, you know, probably happened even earlier than BBN. So if you had still coupled that, it would definitely modify some of the parameters which we used in the BBN. So I think that is the reason why actually you said that already dark matter didn't play any role in Big Bang cell synthesis. It's a very good question, you know, where exactly this would enter the BBN calculation. Other questions? All right, so now let me start. So this was part G, E, maybe H, E, F, F, dark energy. And again, I will not tell you anything about dark energy. I'll just tell you why people think there might be dark energy. And so already in 1980s, people thought there is something fishy . So what they knew at the time is that, well, they knew what is the density of the baryons and what is the density of dark matter. And so this is something like 0.3 rho critical. So actually you would have density of the universe would be much, much smaller than rho critical. So now depending on whether you are bigger or smaller than rho critical, you know that that determines the what type of discrete universe you have, whether you have open universe or closed universe or flat universe. So in this case, you would have, this would imply you use the Friedman equation and it would imply that you would have open universe. Okay. So now, as you have done in your first tutorial, not really, but definitely in your homework, for open universe, so for k equals to minus 1, and this matter content, you can calculate what would be the age of the universe, right? So you can find how a depends on t or whatever, and you can calculate the age of the universe, and you would find that it's 10 to the 8 times 10 to the 9 years old universe. Okay, so this would be the prediction if there was only dark matter and baryons. So that's fine. Apart from the fact that people actually, astrophysicists, were looking at some weird objects in the galaxies. So if you have the galaxy, and so this is my galactic plane, and it sort of rotates around this. Okay. So then you have, of course, most of the stars are in this galactic plane here, but some are not. And so there is this very, very weird place, which is basically on the axis. And typically you have here the oldest stars in the galaxy. And the object is called globule cluster. And you can think about it like a small path, well, smaller galaxy inside a galaxy or whatever. It's approximately 10 to the 5 stars in it. And so astrophysicists were looking at them. But the problem is that they can estimate how old these stars are. And so T of these stars is actually 13 times 10 to the 9 years. Okay, it's 13 times 9 years. So, you know, knowing general relativity, this shouldn't be a problem. Everybody knows that inside the Earth there is one which is much bigger than Earth. So it's not surprised that we can have all the stars than it's the age of the universe. But yeah, it is a problem. Okay, so that was the first observation that maybe there's something wrong here. But the evidence which was awarded a Nobel Prize is the supernova explosions. Supernova. So this is the type of the supernova observations. And so this is Nobel Prize in 2011, and really it's an evidence for that dark energy is in our universe. As we will see, the calculation is very, very simple, and the idea is very, very simple. All it is basically distance versus redshift measurement. Distance versus redshift measurement. All such things are very difficult to do in astrophysics, but nevertheless, people did that. So we will do the theoretical part of this, and you will finish it in your homework, and then you can try to get another Nobel Prize for that, but maybe not. Okay. So what is the setup? So we are basically returning back to kinematics of the FRW spacetime. So we have FRW, And the metric, just I remind you, I'll be using these coordinates. I'll be using this conformal thing, conformal time, minus d eta square. And then I'll be using the chi coordinate, so d chi square plus sk chi d omega square. Okay, so this is the form of the FRW spacetime I'll be using. So now I will have my supernova explode somewhere. Okay. So I always place myself at chi equal to zero. So here's the observer. And let the supernova explode at some chi equal to chi m. So now you will have to wait some time, but at some time, you know, there will be a shell of radiation which will actually hit you from this supernova explosion. So let me draw that shell. So of course, it'll be something like this. And let's say the width of that shell is something like that. Well, this is my shell which is hitting me. So now, if you want to calculate what is the area of the shell, well, if you are looking at this metric here, I'll be setting this guy zero and that guy zero. So I'll be calculating the area just from this omega part. Okay, so integration over the omega just gives you 4 pi. But then I have this a and sk factor. So it won't be 4 pi r square, but it will be 4 pi a square sk square. Okay, so the area of the shell as it hits you is, of course, the expansion now sk square, but this is at the point of emitted. So you need that radius, which is exactly chi emitted, because I have zero here. Okay, so this is the area of the shell. We will also need the thickness of that shell. So L of the shell, and on one hand, it's just, you know, how long it took, which can be written as, you know, if I have some width of the shell in the chi coordinate, this will be the physical distance, the physical thickness of the shell, just coming from here. And of course, because c is 1, it's also how long the shell is actually hitting me, delta t of shell. Okay. So that's the geometry of the problem. Are there any questions to this? So now what you are interested in is to calculate the flux of radiation which is coming from that supernova explosion, and how, you know, what flux do you measure at chi equal to zero. So observe flux. So now flux is an energy per area per time. Okay, so observe flux F is just delta, how much energy we observe in the time d of the shell, and divided by the area. Okay, so this is the flux. Okay, So we want to calculate this quantity here. So first, what is delta E observed? That's, you know, the energy, there's delta E emitted, how much energy was emitted, but we observe a different type of energy because the energy gets redshifted as it travels to us, right? So delta E observed is just redshifted delta E emitted, delta E emitted. So if this was the scale factor at the time of emission, this is the scale factor now. So this is how they are related. And so delta E emitted, you can estimate this thing, you know, how much energy was emitted, knowing that actually all the supernova explosions are very much alike. So they are something which is called standard Kendall. So actually, you assume, or you can sort of verify that, you know, in this type of supernova explosion, you always have the same luminosity. Okay, so now I write it in terms of the luminosity. So the energy is just luminosity times delta T emitted. And again, using the FRW thing, you relate T and eta through the scale factor. So it's L times A delta eta. But you have radial photons. So delta eta is actually delta chi. L A delta chi. Okay. So this luminosity is something which, you know, people no, and it becomes this is a standard Kendall. Okay. Very good. So now we know everything we want to know. So what is this flux here? So we have delta E observed, which is delta E emitted A over A0. So this is A over A0 times delta emitted, which is L A delta chi. So this is delta E observed. Okay. So then we have 1 over delta T shell. So 1 over delta T shell. But delta T shell is just A0 times delta chi. And then we have 1 over A shell, but A shell is that whatever is there. So 1 over 4 pi A0 square SK square at chi emitted. Okay, so this is the formula for the flux. So this is just the A shell. And so delta chi is the same here. And then you have some powers of A. So you have one A here, another A here. So it's A square. And then you have A0, A0, A0 square at the bottom. So it's A0, 4, and it's K square. So it's L over 4 pi. And then A square, A0 to the power 4, SK square, chi emitted. Okay. So we are halfway to get our Nobel Prize. So that's the formula for the flux. And the formula is written in terms of A, A0, and chi emitted. So now we want to express this formula in terms of the redshift, in terms of Z. Okay? So want this in terms of the redshift Z towards our supernova explosion. Okay? And so for that, you'll use a simple fact that A0 over A is the ratio of the frequencies, but the other way around. So that's the cosmological redshift. And then, of course, I add omega 0 and subtract omega 0. And so the first thing gives me redshift, and the second thing gives me 1. So this is z plus 1. OK. So now this is how z translates to a0 over a. We will also need some differential relation. So let's calculate what dz is. Okay, so I make d on both sides. Of course, 1 doesn't do anything. But d on this guy just gives me 1 minus 1 over a square dA. This is minus a0 a square dA. And it's also good to write it in terms of the Hubble's parameter. So I'll just write dA as dA over dt times dt. So dA over dt dt. Certainly true. And so dA over 1a is Hubble's constant. So this is minus a0 over a Hubble times dt. And I'm already running over time. So OK, let me stop here. And let me continue the next one. Questions?